Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. Our guest now to talk about religion, politics and other things in the UK is Paul Handley of the Church Times. Paul, welcome once again.
Hello.
Paul, Rowan Williams announced his resignation, finishing in the job a little early and heading off to Magdalen College at Cambridge.
Yes, we've got, as you can imagine, quite a lot about that in the paper this week. In fact, we have a weekly question for our readers, and this week's question is, has he gone too early? A number of people have been looking at the possible successors and thinking, don't go. Don't go, don't leave us with these men. It's not as bad as that, but certainly there's a feeling now, of course, that he's announced he's going, that people are beginning to appreciate exactly what they're missing, what they're going to lose.
Yes, he was known as someone, who still is, of course, of immense intellect, razor-sharp intellect, accompanied unusually by a depth of spirituality and in some ways humility, but in other ways people would say, no, there's a touch of intellectual superiority there as well.
I'd go along with that up to a point, but I think had he been a real intellectual snob, then he wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes in the job. I mean, he listens to so much rubbish, so many ill-formed arguments, so many unthought-out positions. I mean, that's in a sense, been his job for the last 10 years, it will be, attempting to make people, first of all, understand the consequences of their own positions, and secondly, understand other people. So the difficulty of his job has been to try and unite this centrifugal element in the Anglican Church at the moment.
I read one observation that his failure as Archbishop of Canterbury, if you can call it failure, was that he persisted in believing that you could actually find a via media, a way of bringing the disparate camps over issues like sexuality and other things together, instead of actually taking it politically and forming a group and basically ramming it through, going, this is where we will go and this is how we will do it.
I don't think he made that mistake. I don't necessarily think that he believed he was going to win the unity argument, but I think that intellectually and spiritually he thought that was the way forward. I think he genuinely believed arguing from the Bible, an unusual position sometimes, that the only thing to do, especially in that position, is to work for unity at whatever cost. And that's where he's lost people, on certainly on the Liberal side, because the cost was very high.
Well, indeed, it cost him a friendship very early in the piece, or almost cost him a friendship with Geoffrey John, somebody who he had supported, who it was seen by many of the Liberals abandoned over the issue of gay bishops. He backed down completely.
Yes, and what's forgotten is that those are his first month in office. It hit him very early on, and who knows how much better he would have performed had he had more experience and a greater acumen. But certainly it was a huge blunder, and has overshadowed one element certainly of his time in office, and he hasn't won any friends on the other side either. Well, that's the sadness. The Conservatives have, as we've seen this week, even with a rather vitriolic pronouncement from the Archbishop of Nigeria, he's not liked by the Conservatives either. So it's been a lonely furrow that is ploughed, but nonetheless, I mean, I think there's tremendous respect and liking for the man. So I think, yes, that his spirituality and his humility have carried him through and kept long many friendships.
What would you say, before we talk about who's likely to replace him, is likely to be his legacy?
Well, I think the fact that the Anglican communion is still reasonably together, you have to be careful who you listen to, but the vast number of Anglicans in the world are perfectly happy with their connection with each other and the way the organisation sort of holds together.
Yes, even the overture from Rome to open up the Ordinariate, that is a way of dissident Anglicans fleeing to Rome, doesn't seem to have been the raging success that some would have wished it to be.
No, and we've just seen the breakaway lot, the traditional Anglican communion, rather divided, but basically not terribly enthusiastic about the Ordinariate now. So as things stand, and we've still got to see women bishops come through in the Church of England, so we can't write the Ordinariate off just yet, but it's not been a huge movement yet.
I guess the one thing that some people say would be a loss is that he never resolved the gay bishops issue. He didn't he wasn't prepared to stick around long enough to see that through to the next stage.
Yes, I'm not sure what the next the next stage is. We haven't got anything that's legislative in the moment. It's one of those issues where opinions need to change, and especially when you're looking worldwide, it's I'm afraid it's going to be a long process. Mm. I mean, he has spoken against homophobia. He has he's set in train various listening processes and so on, but in the end, there's been too much silence at the top.
Well, let's talk for a moment then about who shall replace him, who is likely. The Archbishop of York, John Sentamu, has been spoken of. The Bishop of London has been mentioned, who performed so notably at the recent royal wedding. Any others likely on the horizon?
I think what you've got to look at is the age, because the next mountain on the horizon is the Lambeth Conference in 2018. And one of the things that Rowan said is about retiring now is that his successor needs to have a good run-up to get up that hill, because it's quite a steep one. Mm. There's a bunch of bishops in there, 61, 62s. So John Sentamu, for example, is actually slightly older than Rowan. But he would be 69 at the time of the Lambeth Conference. So they can go to 70. So that's sort of all right. I mean, they start losing a bit of energy by that age. So we've got a few people. Whereas the Bishop of London, Richard Charters, he would be 71 then. Which the only way he could do that is if the Queen, this is the way we organise things over here, if the Queen allows him to stay on for an extra year. it's possible. It's possible. They're friends, so that might happen. There are a few others. So there's several bishops who could do it in their early 60s, or they might do what they did with Rome, which is jump down a generation, as it were, to the people in their early 50s. And there's two or three. We quite like a chap called Stephen Cottrell, who's the Bishop of Chelmsford at the moment. It's a large diocese which has quite a lot of East London in it. He's got a sense of humour, which we think is quite a good thing.
And perhaps we'll need it if some of the issues we're talking about continue to carry through. Let's go shift gears and talk about the other big issue of the week, the international issue of the week, which continues, and that's the crisis in Syria. And, of course, one of the arguments about the difficulty of getting rid of Assad in Syria is that around Assad and the Alawites are a lot of other religious minorities, including the Christian minority, who are afraid that if Assad goes, then they may follow.
Yes, and that is a slightly tricky issue, because essentially of all the places in the Middle East, the church in Syria has not find it as difficult as elsewhere. On the other hand, the churches there are very conscious of the violence that the Assad regime has inflicted on their fellow citizens. So it's a rock and a hard place. But we have to be very careful about understanding, as we listen to any official statements from that country, because, of course, you understand that the church is, and they're still under Assad's government, so that, you know, you're not going to get a reliable word of opposition from them, I think.
How is the Anglican Church handling its responsibilities in the area? It comes under the Bishop of Jerusalem, I understand, that the wider Syrian... How does one describe it? Is it the Metropolitan See of Jerusalem? I mean, what's the Anglican diocesan responsibility there?
It's slightly complicated because, of course, although there's an overall organisation, each country is pretty autonomous. I mean, at the moment, it's quite straightforward. The church groups, as well as other NGOs, are calling for a ceasefire. That's a very straightforward and necessary thing to happen next. And once the two sides allow in the humanitarian organizations to mop up after the last bout of fighting, then they can think again. But at the moment, that's the key issue.
One thing of a surprise in the news this week is something that we're not aware of in Australia as a real problem, but for British society it appears to be a new crime called heritage crime. That is acts of wanton destruction and theft for other purposes from heritage listed and church buildings.
It's an astonishing amount. The trouble is that here, as elsewhere, I imagine, crimes against the person and crimes against personal property are the ones that the police concentrate on. So we've had a lot of metal theft in this country in the last few years. Many, many churches have had the lead stripped off their roofs multiple times.
Give us some idea of the extent of this crime.
Well, in the last year... nearly half the churches in this country had some criminal damage on them. So there were 70,000 incidents of crimes against heritage buildings, mostly churches, but these stately homes as well. And it's not criminals thinking, I don't think much of the past, I'm going to go and help myself. It's they're seen as easy targets, often in isolated places, often unsupervised, and there is no regard for centuries of history, the age of the things that are being stripped off and melted down for a few pounds.
Any allusions made to the sort of loss of cultural heritage being a product of the lack of historical knowledge and the disconnect in society that was much spoken about at the time of the riots last year?
There's an element of that because, of course, there's a huge amount. It displays great lack of respect and ignorance of the worth of these things. They are seen only in the value and the cost of the materials, the shape of them, the fact that churches are being ruined by having their roofs stripped and being open to the elements. Is of no interest at all to the criminals. It's a shocking level of violence against the buildings.
Well, finally, Paul Handley, let's turn to an issue that's making the news in Australia as well, because our federal parliament is dealing with the issue, and that's the issue of gay marriage. The church has its own difficulties with the issue, but it's presenting itself in much the same way. That is, can the state introduce civil marriage, and will the state introduce civil marriage as distinct from civil celebration or some form of civil ceremony? The word marriage is once again right front and centre.
Yes, it's hard to quite work out whether this is simply a matter of the vocabulary that's used. And the government in this country hasn't been particularly clear. It's started a review, and it's essentially said we would like gay marriage to be on a par with heterosexual marriage, and here is a review to work out how we can do it rather than whether we should or not.
So the government are saying they are going to move forward with it, the Cameron government.
But they have said, don't worry, we're not going to force the churches to do anything about this, but this isn't terribly satisfactory because, of course, up until this point, there is no distinction between a religious marriage and a civil marriage, that they are exactly the same. It's the same process. It depends where you get married, but there is no distinction between a church marriage and a civil marriage. So,
and the church argument, I take it, is that the word marriage itself has a meaning that is immutable, and it's associated with heterosexual fertility reproduction, and that meaning has stood for all time and should stand for all time.
Yes, there's been an astonishing response to a very conservative petition on, well, you say conservative, it's that, making that point that the word marriage should apply only to heterosexual couples. And I can't remember the latest score, but I think 50,000 people have signed it within the first week. So,
and there was a pastoral letter read in Catholic pulpits, I understand, last weekend.
It's got official backing from the Roman Catholic Church. The Anglicans, as you'd expect, are slightly more divided. But there are lots of people in especially in the churches, but not just church groups as well, who believe that marriage is not a word they want to see more widely defined. It's the start of a national debate, which, of course, the churches have been having on the gay thing for some years already. So it'd be interesting to see how we develop.
Paul Handley, great to have you with us again. Thanks for giving us your time. Paul Handley, editor of the Church Times in Britain. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.